It's Tuesday, February 28th, 2006. You're moving at the speed of creativity with Wesley Fryer, narrowcasting from Lubbock, Texas. Well, hello, and welcome to the third and final podcast from today's presentations and sessions at Region 10 in Richardson, Texas. I was so excited to have an opportunity to visit with educators from a variety of different levels, a variety of different perspectives. We had, I think, some curriculum directors there, we had classroom teachers, we had some IT people, lots of instructional technology folks, even some superintendents and assistant superintendents, and the focus of the whole session was 21st century curriculum and instruction, and it was really focused on disruptive technologies. And the only really point of clarification I want to make is that during the session, when I sort of wrapped up, I don't know if I made my last point quite as strongly as I wanted to, and the point is that despite any fantasies people may have about teaching and learning and how standards can lead to quality, how scripted curriculum can lead to quality, how testing can lead to quality, the bottom line in my mind really is that there is no substitute for a high-quality, passionate teacher. And the teacher is the one that makes the biggest difference in terms of what happens in the classroom and the school. And I think in many places and at many times in our society today, we have forgotten that. So the topic of this presentation is the vocabulary of 21st century learning. And I hope you'll find this of interest. I would welcome any comments and feedback that you might have either on this blog post, which you can find at www.speedofcreativity.org, or you can always visit my personal homepage, which is www.wesfryer.com, and you can click the contact link to either find my email address or to link to a contact form where you can send me some feedback.
If you take your seats, I will go ahead and start with Wes's demonstration and discussion. And give us some vocabulary lessons.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's a very great pleasure for me to have a chance to be with you all today. And I actually ran into somebody from my church on the airplane flying from Lubbock. And he said, "Are you with us? Dallas for business or pleasure?" I said, "Well, it's both, because this is fun. I like to talk about this stuff. And the reason I like to talk about it is because what changes the world? Sometimes we think changing the world is this huge thing. We have to be the president or we have to be in some kind of position to change the world. But I'm here to tell you today that when your perceptions of something change and your actions change as a result of that, the world changes. Has anybody, by the way, been admiring these projectors? These are, I think, the largest projectors I have ever seen. And I am glad that I do not have to have the responsibility of moving or installing or working with those projectors. You know, the more I work with technology, the more I find I crave being away from technology for amounts of time. And last weekend, I had a very special opportunity with my wife to go to Jemez Springs, New Mexico. West of Los Alamos, anyone know the Jemez Springs? I think it's one of the best kept secrets in New Mexico. It's got a spa, it's very non-commercial, it's very laid back. Your cell phone doesn't work there, even if you bring it. They do have wireless, I think, at some of the restaurants now. I saw that we didn't bring the computer. But it's amazing to me to be disconnected from technology and experience what that is. And I'm reminded of the poem from Robert Frost when I think about being disconnected from technology and being in the mountains. Because we had a chance to drive my Forerunner up to really see that there isn't any snow in the high country in southern New Mexico right now. It's very grim for La Nina, you know, it's here. Many days without rain, I think you all have too. And so just having that experience last weekend, this really resonates with me, this idea of the road less traveled. Because Robert Frost said, "I shall be telling this with a sigh, somewhere ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference." Now, Jerry Seinfeld has said, there's a reason why there's a road less traveled, I think. And he's joked about that. But today, the main essential question that I want you to think about, I'm going to challenge you to think about, is whether we want to just do the education that we all are steeped in, that we all have extensive experience in, more efficiently, or whether we want to actually do it differently. And the comments that Sean Blessing shared with us at the beginning, I think really set a stage for why many in our country today believe we need to be doing education differently. And so we're going to talk about that today, and like a good presenter, I'm going to give you an outline, and it's pretty basic. We're going to talk about where we've been, we're going to talk about where we are, and where we're going. And the important thing to note about where we're going is that we have choices. Because as I'll tell you, many people are going to go where we've already been. They're going to keep going in that same direction. And let me tell you also that my website, Moving at the Speed of Creativity, is just speedofcreativity.org. And I'm recording this for a podcast, and so this presentation will be available online as an audio file. And all of the websites and things that I'll be referencing will be linked in the podcast show notes. So feel free to sit back and not jot down URLs. Because I'll be sharing those with you, and you'll be able to get those. Well, what are the change agents in our schools? What changes schools? Well, Tom was just up here talking about the legislature. The legislature is a change agent. We have top-down mandates that definitely change what we do. Okay, we just had tax testing last week, right? We have had big changes in the culture of schools here in the state of Texas. Because of top-down changes. So that is a change agent. But we have other change agents too. And today we've already talked about and heard a little bit about technology as a change agent. And we're going to talk some more about that. But we also have this fancy college word called pedagogy, which really just means the way I approach teaching. What do I believe about teaching and learning? And how do I try and engage you as a student or engage us as a class together in the learning process? And I'm really convinced that I'm having a chance to work a lot with some schools involved in our statewide technology immersion pilot project, the TIP project. Every student, every teacher with a laptop. Wow! So often we're saying we just don't have enough computers, right? If everyone had a device, then we'd be there. But you know what I think? I think you have to have some kind of curricular school reform model, whether it's Phil Schlechte, whether it's Chris Morsch and Loti, whether it's, you know, some kind of small schools approach. I had an opportunity to do, I'll talk about Skype today, but do a Skypecast with folks at High Tech High in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Anybody heard of High Tech High? Okay, came out of Southern California, and they're doing project-based learning as their whole curriculum. And my question to them was, how do you get teachers to come who want to do project-based learning? Because, you know, we're not very steeped in that as teachers. And they just laughed at me. We hire our teachers, and they come to us because they want to do this model. And so High Tech High is not really all about technology. Yes, they have a robotics lab, and yes, the kids are designing innovations, they're doing, you know, fancy things. But it's a lot more about this, the pedagogy, than it is about the technology. So, let's talk a little bit about where we've been. I want to engage you a little bit. And how many of you have listened to a podcast before? You've listened to one. All right. I'm not going to play one in this session. My afternoon session that I'll repeat, we'll listen to some podcasts. And this is one I'll link to in the show notes that I would really commend to every single teacher. We're hearing about STEM. We're hearing about science. And if you just go to Google and you Google for UBC podcasts, you will get the University of British Columbia's podcast. And on the 21st of November, we had a presentation by Dr. Carl Wieman, who is a physics Nobel Prize winner. In 2001, he won the Nobel Prize in physics. And the title of his presentation was Science Education in the 21st Century, Using the Tools of Science to Teach Science. And you know one of the things he said? We do poorly? We just talk to people, right? And so one of the things that we need to do is we need to engage students in what he called consensus groups. We don't have remote control clickers, you know, for you all to commit to an answer. But what I would like to have you do real quick is brainstorm with some people that are right around you, and your task is to come up with three words that you think best capture traditional learning. Okay, so we're just going to briefly start off today by talking about where we've been. So you have 2 minutes to talk with the people around you, and you guys nominate someone to be your secretary, and they need to write down three words. Yes, sir?
Learning.
teaching and learning, you can wrap it together. The educational environment is traditional. What are three words that best capture what that traditional setting is like? Okay, go. You've got 2 minutes.
You'll scroll off the page there.
Sorry, now I'm messing it all up. There, that's it.
Okay.
Okay, got it.
You've got 60 more seconds. I want 3 words on your page. Debate with the people around you to change those words if you don't think those 3 words are the ones you need. Carriage return after each one. Okay, let's go ahead and we'll kind of divide our group into maybe we got kind of 4 different sections. So let's start over here with section 1. Somebody over here can tell us one of our words. Jackie Miller has generously agreed to type for it. Chalkboard. Okay, here in group 2, a word.
Worksheet.
Group 3.
Lecture.
Group 4. Teacher directed and memorized. We'll give you 2 because we'll reverse and go the other way. So teacher directed and memorized. Back to group 3.
Regurgitation.
And I want that one too. Knowledge level. I heard somebody talk about ITV or video conferencing instruction as the show up and throw up model. Regurgitation. Not a pretty metaphor, but maybe appropriate. Group 2. What's that?
Practice.
Group 1. Message.
Passive.
Okay, I'll now open up to everybody. Are there any other words we didn't include that were on your list?
Sit and get.
Isolation.
Boring.
Transfer. Somebody say?
Textbook curriculum.
Okay, textbook curriculum. Teach to the test. Which sort of is new a little bit, the flavor that we have it now. But okay. Any other words that were on your list that are not here?
Teacher-centered.
Okay. Anything else? How about fast answers? I have that one later. But typically we do few voices and fast answers. Because I've only got this much time, and this is when the learning's going to happen, so you better be quick, and you better speak up. Okay. Thank you very much, Jackie. I appreciate your assistance. I will share those. By the way, did you know that Word and PowerPoint run on a Mac? It's amazing. Not everybody realizes that. Sometimes we talk about wikis and blogs and podcasts and all this stuff. And I talk about basic stuff, too. Traditional learning. You guys came up with a great list, and Tom talked about the fact that when there's a term we've all heard of before, it carries a lot of baggage. We all have a lot of experience with traditional learning, and so you used a lot of the words that I thought of, transmission-based, teacher-centered, the Atlas Complex. Have you heard of this? I heard a professor who did a colloquium, I guess it's called, when they come and do their thing when they're interviewing at Texas Tech. The Atlas Complex is, think of Atlas holding up the earth on his back. And teachers often believe that that's what they have to do for learning. They're the ones that initiate the questions. They're the ones that have to get all the conversation going. It relies upon the teacher, not upon the learner. Show up and throw up. Passive students,
Fast answers value, well-structured problem solving. Let me pause on this one. Dr. David Johansen, who is at the University of Missouri, was at our College of Education 2 weeks ago. And he runs the Center for Problem Solving, or the Center for the Study of Problem Solving at the University of Missouri. And he said, in school, we tend to just do well-structured versus ill-structured problems. Yet, how are most of the problems in the real world? They all tend to be ill-structured. They tend to be multidisciplinary by definition. You can't design a building without looking at the environmental impact, without looking at the economic impact. In fact, the fountains, if you ever come to our new College of Ed building, we've had it about, I guess, 4 years now, but they had to design the whole fountain that's in between the English and philosophy complexes with skateboarders in mind. Because if they didn't, the skateboarders would have totally trashed all the art in the fountain and everything that's there. You could not just be an engineer with a mathematical, you know, architectural background in order to successfully design this building, this complex. So I really like that, and if you're interested in hearing more on the Tech College of Education podcast channel, we got permission from Dr. Johansen to record this whole session, and you can listen to that whole session and hear about that. Because we tend to do well-structured problems. Two trains leave two different towns, one traveling at 50 miles an hour, and the other one traveling at 30 miles an hour. They will cross, you know. That's really not problem solving. We're applying a formula to get an answer that somebody else has already found out. Okay? We're filling in someone else's blanks, as someone from Urban Academy in a movie that the George Lucas Foundation has on their website talks about. Textbook is the cornerstone. Teacher-directed, linear learning, limited voices. One of the most beautiful things about the age in which we live is how we can have literally the voices of not just adults, but the voices of students really become part of the fabric and culture of what we're doing in schools. And some of the podcasts that I'll play and share with you, Willowdale Elementary School, which is in Omaha, Nebraska, Room 208, which is in Wells, Maine. You know, these kids are creating podcasts, and there's something about the human voice. You know, you can have someone write something down and communicate that, but when you hear it in their voice, there's just something that is magical and powerful about that. But traditionally, the number of voices and the types of voices that are included in our textbooks are pretty limited, and in our classrooms. How do we measure learning in the state of Texas today? I would say there's two ways we measure learning. You said assessment, okay? But how about that? How are you paid? Why are you here, right? We're here at the Service Center because we measure learning predominantly by seat time. You sit here at the Service Center for 6 hours, and we assume that learning is going to take place, and you will walk away a more enlightened educator, okay? We have measured it with seat time. ADA, right? Aren't all our districts paid by average daily attendance? We're not paid based off what the kids can do or based off of what they are able to walk away from. Whether they not only go to college, but how about stay in college for 4 years? High Tech High is tracking students' retention in college 4 years into the enterprise as a measure of success. Because as we heard, the dropout rate the first year of college is the highest dropout rate everywhere. So we measure it with seat time and we measure it with standardized assessments. Well, let's talk a little bit about where we are. And I love when folks give me a microphone to talk for a little bit. So let me just share four different things about where I think we are today. And the first one is going to be some fantasies that I think we have about learning and about teaching and how it happens. I want to talk a little bit about how technology has changed us, a little bit how kids are changing, and then reference a little bit about outsourcing. You got a lot of statistics from The World is Flat, from Sean's presentation, but I'll talk a little bit about that. And we're going to wrap up the session this morning with Carrollton Farmer Branch teachers talking about the podcasting project that they're doing and the successful, exciting things. You know, when you give I'm excited when you give me a microphone, okay? Well, what's a fourth grader when you give them a microphone and you say, we're going to let you record your voice and we're going to share this with potentially a global audience? Holy cow, that can be an exciting thing. It could be a disruptive thing. It could be a scary thing, but it can be a positive thing. So let's talk about four different what I would call 21st century learning fantasies. And the first thing is, what is a quality outcome
You know, how do we measure quality outcomes? How do we get quality outcomes? I read an academic piece in Educational Researcher magazine a couple months ago. It was talking about teacher quality. It said, it's a black box. Everybody agrees, we want quality teachers. We want kids that are achieving, that are succeeding. But how you get teachers to teach with quality so the kids learn and they walk out the door with the skills that they need? Well, I would say the first fantasy we have is that human cognition is linear. Traditionally, when we teach, it's like this Roman numeral outline, right? I'm going to start with one, subpoint one, and go to subpoint two, and little a, and that's the content I'm going to transmit to you. And some people have this belief that that's how everyone learns. And we know from all of the learning styles, the Howard Gardner research, that, you know, people learn differently. Yet this is how our school system is set up. It's set up in a lot of ways saying that at this age, at this time, you will know this, and you know, that's just the way it's going to be because we're in a factory, okay? The factory model is the best for learning. We've all been steeped in traditional education. Because we have so much experience with it, we tend to think that's what's best. And by the way, you know most folks in the United States don't think there's a crisis in education? Because if they did, we would be seeing some changes. You know, most of our parents, most of our community members, most of our business leaders look in the paper and they see the scores in the paper, and yeah, they hear these stories about testing and fear and things, but in general they think we're doing it right. We're doing school the way we need it to have school. Here's another fantasy. And I think I'm probably, you know, in danger of being kicked out of the state by saying this, if not the nation. But we have faith that if we have standards, we will get quality. We will get quality teaching, and we will get quality outcomes. And I am very in touch with this at the College of Education. We subscribe to this thing called TaskStream, and it lets students create electronic portfolios. They can go out there and grab standards from you name it, okay? Tax standards, ISTE standards, NCTM standards, NCTE standards. I mean, everybody has got standards. I taught fourth grade, all right? In the mid to late 90s, I was overwhelmed by all the standards. But we have this faith that if we have a lot of standards, we get quality. Here's another thing that I think is a fantasy. We believe that if we have high-stakes testing, that leads to quality. Now, notice I didn't say assessments, because I don't think any teacher can stand up and say, oh, I'm not going to assess learning. I'm not going to assess kids. But we have this fantasy today that when we have an environment of high-stakes testing, then that leads to quality outcomes. And I don't have it cited here, but I'll link to it. Dr. David Berliner, who's at the University of Arizona, has done quite a bit of research on this, pointing to the fact that we are getting the opposite results that we are wanting in terms of educational outcomes when we have a high-stakes testing environment. Do any of you thrive in a culture of fear? By a show of hands, please. Okay? Hey, some stress and some pressure can increase performance, right? I was in the military. I went through basic training. In fact, I went through a year kind of basic training because I went to one of our military academies. And, you know, we know this from human psychology. If you look at the human performance curve, right, you increase stress, you can increase performance, but what happens at a point, it's called the point of diminishing returns, and you start to lose performance. I am very concerned as a parent, as an educator, as a human being, about the culture of fear that exists in our schools. And there's actually two digital stories. I'll tell you this because maybe you'll make the movie and I won't have to. But there's two movies I want to make. One is, I want to just do a little documentary interview. I could do it with audio or I could do it with a camcorder, just interviewing some of the parents in our community. Because we have folks that between second and third grade had nightmares, that, you know, before going to school because of the third grade test. And there is this culture of fear that we have. The other movie I want to make, it relates to information overload. Anybody overloaded? By the way, thanks to Dr. Larry Lessig for his presentation style. This is called the Lessig style. It's just fast, you know, text-only approach. I want to do a digital story in cooperation with the local fire department. And when they're testing the fire hydrant, you know, and they've got that thing on full blast, I think you'd be injured if you actually touched the stream of water, but you could probably take some cups and, you know, take some things and do a very dramatic, you know, example of what it means to, you know, try and deal with a fire hose of information.
Anyway, we're going to talk about digital storytelling, and I really think that's a place we need to center ourselves as teachers. We are hardwired for stories. Your great, 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 great grandparents were telling stories to each other, and they were learning stories, and you remember stories because it's just part of our brain. So I don't know what's going to change this at the big level, but I do know that a culture of fear is a difficult place to thrive, especially in the long term. And here's the last fantasy that we have. And I think this fantasy is that a scripted curriculum leads to quality. And actually, I'm here to tell you that it is exactly the opposite. The type of classroom that I want my children in, and that I want to teach in fact, is one where I am empowered to be passionate and teach from my passion, from what excites me and what motivates me, not to just teach a dry script so that you can fill in the blanks of someone else's worksheet. Yet we think today that scripted curriculum leads to quality. Oh, sorry, there's one more. And that is time pressure. Anybody hear time pressure? Oh my gosh, that's why I told you our trip to Hamath Springs is so wonderful, because you know what? I woke up last Saturday morning and I didn't have anywhere to go. And I didn't really even have an alarm clock that was set. I didn't have a phone that anybody knew the number to where I was. No computer. You know, boy, it's great to be able to escape that for a little while. Yeah, what's facing our kids today? And I don't have this slide, but at the TCEA conference a couple weeks ago, I gave a presentation that I called Cultivating Digital Literacy Through Blogging and Podcasting. It's very similar to what we're talking about here today. These tools of Web 2.0, which we'll talk about, can help us, help kids learn 21st century literacy skills. And one of my points there was that there's a disconnect because the business community says, test, 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 test. And then they say, 21st century literacy skills, synthesis, design, creative thinking, and all these. Do those go together? Let's do a Venn diagram, people. They don't overlap. Okay? This is a problem. So let's talk about technology and information changes and a few statistics. And then I'm going to give you another chance to do some brainstorming here in a minute. We got a lot of statistics early from Sean. But how many of you have read a blog, read something that somebody has written on a blog? Okay, hands down. How many of you have your own blog? Okay, wow, that's the largest number of people in an audience I've talked to so far that do. How many of you have someone at your school who is using a blog to publish student writing, to help students publish? Okay, one person. Fast story. At TCEA, and this is a link that I'll share in the letter session, I'll link it to in the show notes. I shared a room blog that is from Seattle, Washington, and it's called Mark Aulis's Mighty Writers. Okay, they're actually the third graders. And we read an entry that one of Mark's students had posted on December the 27th. Now, I don't know about your school district, but in mine, in West Texas, we're not in school on December 27th. So this student had written on her own, and it was called the Last Gift, or it was about a Christmas gift that she wanted to give to her neighbor. And there had been like 120 people that had viewed this, because you could see the number. One person had commented, and it was her aunt. You know, and the point was, it wasn't so much that, you know, 80 people commented on it, but the fact that someone she cared about was that audience made that writing much more worthwhile. And what was also neat about that story is, I recorded my session at TCEA, put it on my blog as a podcast. The next day, Mark, who's the third grade teacher in Seattle, played this for his class, that little part where I talk about her writing. Her mom's in the room hearing us say, in Texas, we thought enough of what she wrote to read it and to share it with others. Now, 5 or 10 years from now, it may not be a big deal to say, oh gosh, we read what they did in this classroom across the country. But let me tell you, right now in 2006, that's a big deal. Blogs are disruptive technology. But I would take issue with John Dvorak that Sean quoted to say, these things have been around a long time. Folks, I just finished the Da Vinci Code. Any of you read that? Okay, I'm looking forward to that movie. It's going to be a great movie. When you think about the control of information and who has been allowed to publish information in the world historically, I mean, we've got a history of digital content in the state of Texas. You know, and we had Michael Moline talk about the history of books, but seriously, that is dramatically different. The fact that a third grader in Seattle can write something, it's published, and we read it in Texas. And she got pretty jazzed about it. So did her mom. Alright, how many of you know about RSS? It's one of these terms that will glaze eyes. We're not going to do anything to talk a lot about it. But the fact is, it lets us subscribe to things. Okay, it lets me pull it instead of push it. Anyone here like spam? Anyone enjoy that? Okay? No, because it's getting pushed to us and we are not asking for it. But with RSS, we can pull it. And if you'd like to hear, you know, podcasts from Room 208 in Wells, Maine, they'll be downloaded to your computer. Okay? Free cross-platform tools. iTunes is available. There are other options too. Regardless of your computer platform, they're free. Now, let me talk to you about why blogs matter. This is from David Jakes, and I'm having an opportunity to be blogging on the Technology and Learning website now with four other educators all over the place. David is in Chicago. He's actually really into digital storytelling. And if you're looking for digital storytelling, I saw that here at Region 10, you all be talking about open source technology, PhotoStory 3, great tool. Okay, Microsoft is getting it. Yeah, that's good, Microsoft. You know, we need a tool like that on the Linux side too for free open source. But, you know, with iPhoto and iMovie, Apple has been offering that kind of functionality. It's not hard. How many of you know about BubbleShare, by the way? BubbleShare website? Free, register, upload pictures, record your voice. I will include a link to the one that I just shared. We did a video conference with Room 208 in Wells, Maine about 3 weeks ago when I was in Miami, Texas. Anybody know where Miami is? You think Miami's rural? It's only 20 minutes from Walmart, because Pampa's got a Walmart. So it's not super rural. No, actually, it is really rural. It's like 300 people, I think. But, you know, I was helping them learn about digital storytelling. And anyway, we were just talking about where we've been, and I told these kids about living in Mexico City for a year, and I climbed Popocatépetl, which is one of the volcanoes south of it. And one of their teachers emailed me back and said, gosh, it'd be great if you would do a bubble share with that. So anyway, free tool, you can go online, record your voice with a microphone, put that to pictures. This is what David Jake says about why blogs matter. 70,000 blogs are created each day. Between 700,000 and 1.3 million posts are made each day by bloggers all over the world. The blogosphere, which is just the term for all these blogs that are all over the place, is 30 times larger than it was 3 years ago. That is incredible. Now, how many of you have actually used a wiki? Either you've accessed a wiki or you've gone to a wiki. I mean, we're talking about vocabulary here a little bit. Blogs like a web page, right? Except it's frequently updated, usually. And I can subscribe to it. I can get those posts brought to my computer. There's a way to do it with email. There's a free service called FeedBlitz. I've got it linked on my website. So if people want email from your school district blog or whatever, they can still do that. That's a blog. What is a wiki? Think of it as an editable web page, okay, that multiple people edit together. How many of you have been to the Wikipedia? Okay, I guess some of you go to Allen November last week in Region 11, and you probably talked about some of this. Hopefully I'm not repeating everything. A wiki is a collaboratively edited website. And why is that important? Well, if you've ever worked with FrontPage, or you've ever worked with Dreamweaver, you know that it is a fairly complex thing to get content up on the web. If you're working on a project with other students, number one, what's one of the biggest problems with group projects? Skaters, right? The ones that don't do any work, and one kid does it all, you know? I'm not talking about, skateboarders. I'm just saying those that skate through without doing any work. Well, a wiki tracks exactly who has updated what. Oh, look, Josie logged in at, 5:30 yesterday evening, and edited and did this, and, oh gosh, look, Joe's never logged into the wiki. Guess he didn't do anything on this assignment. There's tremendous potential for wikis to be used effectively in schools. Let's talk about what the largest encyclopedia in the world is today. And let's talk about what is the most accurate encyclopedia in the world. Because did you know they're one and the same? The most accurate encyclopedia in the world is the Wikipedia. The average encyclopedia has about 30 volumes. That means that it has somewhere in the neighborhood of about 60,000 articles. The 2002 Encyclopedia Britannica has 85,000 articles in it.
Okay? The Wikipedia last night had over 987,000 articles, way more than 10 times the size of the largest encyclopedia that's print-based, or the average one, I guess. In English alone, and Wikipedia is in over 200 languages, it has over 340 million words. Now, we might be impressed by quantity, and we do have quantity in size. It is more than six times larger than the largest print encyclopedia in over 200 languages. But look at this! How did the Wikipedia grow like this in 5 years? It's because people like you and me, all over the world, have edited it and contributed to it. And there's interesting stories that have come out. We've got congressional staffers that have actually gone in and virtually vandalized the Wikipedia entries for their opponents. And they track this with IP address, and they can see it coming from the Senate IP range. You know? These people need a course in digital citizenship. You know? What is civil discourse? And what is reasonable? I mean, we're going to have to do this with our students, but good grief, we need to do this with Congress, maybe to begin with. 89, almost 90,000 people as of last night have contributed to this. And folks, I'm telling you, your students not only need to be accessing information, you know, consuming, getting more familiar with that, they need to be writing it. They need to be putting content on the Wikipedia. 43,531 people to date have contributed to the English language version. Just since October, there have been 3.7 million edits to the Wikipedia. Unbelievable. And you might think, how can that be accurate? I mean, librarians. Do many of you have librarians that you talk to about the Wikipedia? What is the typical response? No way. We are not going there. Okay? Because information is all about control. It is not about disruptive. Well, I guess this is my last deal on size comparisons. The Wikipedia is now the largest encyclopedia in the world, and it has a mean article length, an average article length of 382 words. And we are not in a library today, but in Miami, Texas, it's a great opportunity because we're doing the professional development. 22 teachers, K-12, average class size, about 10 to 15, from the library, there's the encyclopedia. So I pull it out. I say, tell me a country, and let's open it up, and let's see what resources we have for a student learning about Belize or learning about China in your encyclopedia. And now let's look at Wikipedia. We also had a Supreme Court justice confirmed one day while I was there. Guess what was on the Wikipedia? All the information about him and his background and all of this stuff. You're going to get that in your print-based encyclopedia? No. You're never going to get it in that copy, and you're going to have to wait quite a while until the school can afford to buy a new version if that's what you're relying on. So, Wikipedia also has over 390,000 photographs. Okay, and look at the links. 16.8 million cross-reference links between articles and to external websites. 5 years. That's how long it's been there. This is significant, folks. And we need our teachers to know about this. We need our students to know about it. And we need them to know about it, not just so they can consume the content, but so they can also author the content. Last point about Wikipedia. Accuracy. Article in Nature magazine, December 2005. They had a peer review where they looked at the Encyclopedia Britannica and they looked at Wikipedia. They found the average science entry for the 42 entries they looked at had about 4 inaccuracies in Wikipedia, about 3 in Britannica. Now, when you consider how large the Wikipedia is, it is vastly more accurate than even the Encyclopedia Britannica. So, when you go back to your districts and you're talking to your teachers and you're talking to a librarian, pull this up. I'll have this link in the show notes that you can just Google for Nature Wikipedia. I think the article is called Encyclopedias Go Head-to-Head. Pretty easy to find. Wikipedia.org. Okay. How many of you use Flickr? Well, how many of your districts block Flickr? We have any IT people here? Flickr is an amazing resource. Why? Because people upload photos to Flickr and they tag them themselves. So this weekend, as the Lubbock school system was laying a fiber optic cable to our local elementary school, should be good news, I took some pictures of it. And I tagged them, fiber optic, bandwidth, some other things. So if you search Flickr, you're going to find what Wes Fryer, you know, how I tag my photos.
Over 1 million photos have been posted to Flickr in just a little over 2 years. Phenomenal resource. And the Creative Commons search page of Flickr, which I'll also link on the show notes, is the best place for you and your students to go, I think, when you're looking for pictures to put with a presentation. This is the first presentation I've ever done, by the way, that was like pretty much all text-based. Usually I'll grab a lot of pictures. And the reason why it's a great place, because with Creative Commons, you specify the permission. Sure, go ahead, please reuse this. Use this in your presentation, but do it non-commercially. Or do it with a share-alike license. I mean, you've got to give other people permission to do it. So that's a little bit about Wikipedia, a little bit about Flickr. Let's talk a little bit about kids and iKids. How many of you know about the term digital natives? I'm probably speaking to the, well, really?
Yeah.
Show of hands, digital natives. Okay, yeah, I thought you guys. I've heard this. Mark Prince coined the term in 2001, we are the digital immigrants. Prince observed that in 2001, the average college graduate spends less than 5,000 hours reading, but more than 10,000 hours playing video games, and more than 20,000 hours watching television. We have a quotation in his article from a high school student that says, every time I go to school, I have to power down. Folks, we do not want our kids powering down when they go to school. We want them powering up for life. How many of you saw this article in the George Lucas Edutopia? October 2005. Edutopia is one of the best magazines I could recommend that you subscribe to because it's free. And it is all about what I'm discussing today, and that is engaging students, looking at how we can utilize these tools to effectively provide them with opportunities to learn, be prepared for their future. So in the iKids article, it includes a survey from the Henry J. Kaiser Family Foundation. It found that young people ages 8 to 18 mainline, that's not my drugs, electronic media for more than 6 hours a day on average. Chris Morsch, who, as you may know, authored the LOTI, the Levels of Technology Implementation Framework, which I think now is free, by the way, for teachers to take. You can still pay to get more, but teachers can take that for free. This was his quote, and you all said this earlier in our brainstorm. The typical kid's reaction is, I'm bored to tears. There's a total disconnect between my life and what's going on in the classroom. John Blake, a North Carolina educator, said, kids are bombarded by media, they're completely high-tech, and they don't know a different way. When you hand them a book, they're going to say, is this all there is? And unfortunately, in many of our schools, that is all we have today. But the good news is, there's never been a more exciting time to be alive, and there's never been a more dynamic, empowering environment in which to live, to communicate, and gain the skills of literacy that we need. We heard about outsourcing, so I'm not going to give you a lot of statistics about this, but I do echo both what Tom and Sean said about the world is flat. I listened to this, actually, on my parents are in Manhattan, Kansas, 12-hour drive from Lubbock, Texas to Manhattan, Kansas with kids. Without children, I think 8.5 hours, perhaps. We have three. And yes, they were all subjected to The World is Flat by Thomas Friedman. I don't know what we'll choose. My kids have really been wanting iPods, and for a while I held them off by saying, you'll need to be able to read to have this iPod. Well, now my second grader is there, and my kindergartner is fast approaching. And anyway, this is an excellent book to read because it's going to challenge us to think about what we're doing in education. And let me just offer a counterpoint that Peggy Johnson, who's one of my chairs of my doctoral committee at Tech, said is, how do you think the rest of the world views us saying we're not competitive enough? Do you know folks in other countries? I mean, for someone in another country to say, the United States doesn't think they're competitive enough and they need to be more competitive, that's a kind of a shock. But anyway, current issue of time. Have you seen this? Is America flunking science? Are we losing our edge? See the State of the Union address by our president? He's jumped on a train that was already gone from the station, you know, many months ago. That wasn't actually news. Here's the key. It's about innovation. It's not just about everyone becoming a geek. Everyone in your school does not need a Cisco certification. People may disagree with that. I mean, certifications are great. But what the engine of change and growth and economic development in our nation has been is creativity and innovation. And what are we doing in schools especially with what I'll call sustaining technologies with regard to innovation, it's not what we need to be doing. Here's a quotation from that Time Magazine cover article, which is free online. You can just Google for Time Magazine and go to the current article. Imagine to Stanford University President John Hennessy that the next round of innovations and networking is done in India or China. How many years is it before either Cisco relocates to India or China and grows most of its new jobs there, or the next Cisco is actually created there? That's not so far-fetched, says DuPont CEO Chad Holliday. If the U.S. doesn't get its act together, DuPont is going to go to the countries that do, and so are IBM and Intel. We'd much rather be here, but we have an obligation to our employees and shareholders to bring value where we can. HP, largest, I think, computer company in the world, most of their employees are not U.S.-based. But where is their headquarters? Silicon Valley. Okay. Microsoft, headquarters, Redmond, Washington. Apple Computer, headquarters, Cupertino, California. All right. So we've got people talking about competition and competitiveness and innovation, and we have this report. February 2006, it's going to retail for like $60, but you can download, if you'd like to read the whole thing, 543 pages worth, for free, now. It's called Rising Above the Gathering Storm, Energizing and Employing America for a Brighter Economic Future. And here's the quote from the beginning of the K-12 section. This is titled, What Action Should America Take in K-12 Science and Math Education to Remain Prosperous in the 21st Century? 10,000 teachers, 10 billion minds. Here's what it says. The U.S. system of public education must lay the foundation for developing a workforce that is literate in math and science, among other subjects, but look within yellow. It is the creative, intellectual energy of our workforce that will drive successful innovation. Folks, let's think about the metaphorical Venn diagram. Okay, we've got 21st century learning skills, and we've got the skills that we reinforce if all we're doing is focusing on that high-stakes testing environment and that test. That's not going to match this challenge. So, let me give you a chance to, in the interest of time, we can do some brainstorming about where we're going to go. And I want to give the Carrollton Farmers Branch folks plenty of time to be up here and talk. So, let me go ahead and finish this last section and then invite them to come up. And then I'm going to say just a few words at the beginning. Many of us are going to keep going where we've been going in education. That's why I started with the Robert Frost quote, right? More efficient or different? What do you want to do? Many people are going to choose more efficient. I really think tools are value neutral, okay? You can use the tool well or you can use it poorly. How you use the tool is what's critical. We've got two paths in front of us. So, we have sustaining technologies. I could be talking with a blackboard right now. I'm going to be using an overhead projector. I'll be using nothing. Okay? Is it wrong to use a sustaining technology to reinforce the same kind of pedagogy that I've used before but use technology? No. If you look at Apple Classrooms of Tomorrow research, the longest longitudinal study of integration and how teachers acquire these skills and learn, it says what they do first. But folks, most people are stuck here. Most students are stuck here. And we think that is what education is all about. Electronic gradebooks. Are you excited about electronic gradebooks? When I taught fourth grade, you better believe I was at the end of the 6 weeks. I cannot imagine doing grades without an electronic gradebook or a spreadsheet. But that is really not a transformative or disruptive thing. It does give me time, which is what I want as a teacher, but it doesn't necessarily cause me to do anything different. Digital lesson plans. Is that exciting? Well, depends who you are. For the administrator who wants to tightly control what everyone is doing and make sure that you're on page 5 on week 3 of the second 6 weeks, maybe that's a great thing. You know, it can enhance control. I'm very concerned about this. And we have this happening a lot across the state and across the nation. And here's my big point. Sustaining technology, if used poorly, can crush creativity. But it doesn't have to, because we have this stuff called disruptive technology, and we've already heard a little bit about it. Christensen says the disruptive technology is a new product or service that eventually overturns existing dominant technologies. It threatens stuff. And if we had more time, we could brainstorm innovative learning. But let me just let you do this on your own. Think about your GT training that you do in your districts. Think about the kinds of things that you try to get your kids to engage in at higher levels, higher order thinking. How do you do that? Louisville did the quilt training. this week, right, where you all were talking about, or somebody was just talking to me, where was that?
Palmer,
thank you. Palmer was doing quilt training where they were talking about just different instructional strategies to engage students and get them thinking at higher levels. You know, we don't have to have technology to do that. The disruptive technology can help us do it, okay? You all mentioned the front page of the Dallas paper. Front page of the Lubbock Sunday paper, okay? This is the section. Space invaders. Cyberspace creates an open window for predators of youth. Do you know about MySpace and Zynga? Okay. Do your parents know about it? Do your teachers know about it? Are we just banning kids from communicating socially and saying that's illegal? Or are we trying to help them learn the skills of digital citizenship for how we engage in civil discourse and how we can safely utilize tools that are read-write web tools, the blog tools, use them safely so we're not setting ourselves up to be the victim of a crime? Blogs can be disruptive. Podcasts can be disruptive. Instant messaging can be disruptive. By the way, how many of your districts ban instant messaging? In some West Texas schools, you instant message during class, you have two choices, LIT or ISS. And someone told me during the break that in their district, they've actually, in elementary school, they've banned doing this. I'm like, boy, you couldn't do that in Lubbock, you know, because that's guns up. That's what the Red Raiders are all about, baby. We have students at some of these schools that are asking the principal when they say, I'm sorry, you've been caught in the messaging, it's LICS or ISS. Do I get my computer back if I get the LICS? Okay, I'll take the LICS. Wikis can be disruptive. Web 2.0, which all of these things fit in, it's called the read-write web. You don't have to have front page, you don't have to have a programming degree in order to get this content on the web. Digital storytelling fits in here. Voice over IP. How many of you have used Skype? Anybody use Skype? Woo, I got some big smiles. I had a Skype conversation with Ewan McGregor, who is in Scotland, with, didn't write these names down, Winnipeg, Canada, and his name is escaping me, and he is a high school calculus teacher in Canada, and my friend Miguel Gulen in San Antonio, and we all used a free tool called Skype, and we had to do it at 10 p.m. because it was 4:30, I think, in the morning in Scotland. We all talked, we all recorded. It was amazing, it was cool. Millions of people are using Skype right now to talk, but what do we say in school about that? We don't do that. You can't do that in school, okay? Because of test scores. Well, here's a report that you need to take back to your district, go to the EPALS website. This comes out of New Jersey, Newark, New Jersey, Urban School. This was released in the beginning of February. The headline is, Classroom Literacy Levels Impacted by Weekly Email Letter Writing to Peer Classroom Using EPALS. Okay? New Jersey State Tests come out. Whoa! We've got a 30% higher score in this one classroom. What was the intervention? What was different? Well, several times a week, the kids emailed a peer classroom in Italy. Basic stuff, folks. You'll write more, you'll learn to write better. You'll practice, you get better. And these tools are available for us to use today. So, I'm going to have just a couple comments to wrap up. Let me go ahead and invite the folks from Carrollton Farmers Branch to come up, talk to you a little bit about podcasting in their district, and then we're going to wrap up.
We feel like she will slaughter or something after that. But I'm LaDonna Connor, and this is Amy Bramhall, and we are with the Carrollton Farmers Branch School District. And we are doing iPods and podcasting in our school district. And we started this last year. We read the Duke article like everybody did and went, wow. And so we decided we'd give it a try. And let's see if I can do this little thing. Oh, there's my receiver. This was the key to our success. Was we started with our technology, our CTO, Dr. Vernie, and then we actually got the buy-in from the curriculum and instruction administrators, from our bilingual and ESL administrators, from our languages other than English, and then our whole technology services division. We went to them and we said, we think this is what will work. We think it's a good idea. We proposed to them the curriculum part of it. That's what we focused on, and they said, we agree with you, and so, you know, that's how we got started with it. We, to unlock the success, these are the things that we brainstormed, was planning, and oh my gosh, did we plan. It just took a tremendous amount of how do you get it done logistically, how do you do this. We provided training days for our teachers involved in the pilot, and then we involved, after the training day, they really felt like they needed some collaboration days. Now, how are we going to, what are we going to do, how are we going to do this, how are we going to do things differently in our classroom? So we just brought them in and let them do some collaboration. We have support because two of the campuses involved in this are middle schools, and they, each of our middle schools have their own middle school campus facilitator, the technology facilitator. And then Amy and I are instructional technology specialists, and we support this. The last thing, the teachers that are involved in this pilot are risk takers, without a doubt, and they are truly the stars of this. They are the ones who stepped outside the box and said, let's try it, let's do something different. And so they really are the ones who have taken it and just done an awesome job with it. We do have an evaluation process at the end because we, before Dr. Burning would let us go on, how are you going to evaluate this? You know, what are you hoping to get from it? And we'll show you kind of very briefly what the evaluation results are. This is what we started with. They gave us $33,000. We bought with that iPod, IHOP, protective cases, which after going back and look at them, that was kind of a joke. We bought a microphone headset for the teachers, and we bought a piece of software because we are a PC district. Sorry, Apple. We are a PC district, so we bought a program called Feed for All, which allows us to create the RSS feed. And that's what we started with. Who's involved? We have two newcomers classes at Vivian Field Middle School, one at Vivian Field Middle School, one at Dan F. Long. We have an ESL 1 class at R.F. Hunter High School. And we actually have a French 4 class at Newman Smith High School. We also have a kindergarten teacher that wrote an educational foundation grant that has iShuffles in her kindergarten classroom, and that has just is really working well also. We didn't include that because she's really not doing podcasting, and so what we were focusing on are the iPods and the podcasting. Our teachers are actually podcasting, and our students are actually podcasting. The students in our French 4, because those students were already, are well, you know, speak English well, better than I do apparently, but they already don't have to learn the English language. For their final exam, they actually had to create, for the first semester, they had to create, their final exam was a podcast, and they had to podcast their final exam, and that's how their final exam for the first semester was done. They created the podcast, posted their podcast, and the teacher subscribed, and that's how the teacher graded their final exam. Amy is going to talk to you a little about some of the classroom changes and motivations and some of the things that the teachers are doing in the classroom.
I really don't like microphones. Some of the main things, the changes that the teachers have seen, other than we're hitting on non-educational pieces right now, or non-curriculum, are the motivation in the classroom. The kids are doing their homework more than they ever have been. They're excited to come to school. And these newcomers and ESL kids, they were not necessarily the stars of the school, and they really didn't feel a part of the campus. Now with these iPods and knowing that they're making basically history in our district, they believe in themselves so much more, and they're excited about coming to school, and their parents are really getting involved in it as well. Where can we buy an iPod for ourselves? Are you going to put things out there for us that we can learn English better as well? Again, motivation to do the homework, and the high school students, they're assigned to do journals for their homework. Before, then when they had to write it, 10% of the kids would do it. If anybody's ever taught high school in here, getting any high school student to do homework is difficult as it is. In 2006, this year, in Drew Mayer's classroom, he has gotten about 95% of the students to complete their homework assignments, because not only does he have them do some writing, they can just do their story summaries, they can work on their vocabulary words, their fluency and pronunciation through their iTalk.
And if you've never seen what an iTalk is, it looks like, this is what he's recording his podcast for today on, this one little microphone that sits on top of this iPhoto.
In all of the classrooms, the newcomer and the ESL1, what the teachers are recording for their podcast are things like adjectives, working on past tense, present tense of the verbs. They actually fall under a special education amendment to the copyright law that allows the teachers to actually record books in. So they read and record the books, and the kids are able to go get a book out of the library, follow along with it. What the teacher typically asks them to do is to write down the words that they understand that they could define for the teacher.
I'm only a technology specialist, y'all don't excuse me.
So they have books on their podcast, stories that they're reading in class. They have their vocabulary words, their spelling words for the week in their podcast. Okay, so I'm going to get ahead of myself because I know what I think is up there. In Vivianville Middle School, the teacher gives them 20 words a week to work on for their vocabulary, their pronunciation, and then actually spelling. Last year, on every Friday, when they would go to have their test, you would bring them up to the desk and ask them to repeat the words and kind of spell them. Well, they would get about 50% of them right. Now that they have the iPod, it's the podcast, they can listen to the vocabulary words or spelling words at home, they can practice the pronunciation. If they didn't get it the first time, they can listen to it again and again and again, whereas the teacher can pronounce it for them only a certain amount of time in those two-hour class that they have her with. They're taking her home every day. Now, every Friday, they're hitting 90 and 95% with the understanding, their pronunciation, the fluency in their reading. It's incredible progress. Okay, assessment. Again, our boss, his big, before he gave us his $33,000, he said, how are we going to know that it benefits? More than just anecdotal records, how are we going to know? Fluency. They're doing, in the middle school classrooms, both teachers combine together to write up their assessment. They have a fluency, a story that they have to go through and read. So they'll read it one time ahead of the time, one time they'll try and read it through. Then they'll listen to it, you know, for a while on their iPod and go through it a second time so that we can hear the before and the after. Answering questions, they'll listen to their story. There's some questions that they have to answer. And so that also works on, assesses their fluency, their conversational skills, as well as reading comprehension. It's one thing in an ESL classroom to be able to read the words. It's another thing to understand what you're reading. Dictation, phonetic awareness, listening comprehension, writing skills. So they'll listen to a passage and have to try and spell it and write it correctly. And again, listening comprehension as well, based on the story that they've had to listen to on their iPod. What's next? This is the most exciting part. We had a meeting with our CTO just this past week, and we have 100 iPods with a little less than 100 kids right now in these four classrooms. We walked in and he said, so are we ready to give an iPod to every ESL student? And we kind of fell on the floor because that's just a few too many iPods to have out this next year, but we're looking at expanding it to somewhere between 300 and 500 students this next year. We're working on getting Macs back into our schools, because if any of you are involved in podcasting, the enhanced podcast availability on a PC is not quite where it is on a Mac. You can do so much more. We're going to bring video iPods into the classroom. Add ESL, newcomer kids, and probably another French class on a different high school campus.
We would love for you to come out and visit us and visit these teachers and see what they're doing. Their websites, they have their podcast on their website. Our students are podcasting on an intranet for right now. But when the students do their podcasting, talk about a quality. They spend so much time because they know that it's going to be podcast, and for some reason that makes such a huge difference to them to be published. And so they spend a great deal of time wanting to get it correct. And we are talking about students, mostly we've talked about our ESL students, and they really, they don't have a real good comprehension or fluency level. And so they want to make sure that they are getting it correct. And it has made a huge difference with those students being able to publish their work, even as a podcast. So we'd love for you to come out and visit us, visit our teachers, and see what we're doing. That's our contact information. We're not podcasting our presentation, but...
We give you permission to
podcast? Absolutely.
You are.
So, but we would love for you to come out and visit us. We can answer any questions. Please feel free to contact us. And now we'll turn it over to the staff.
Thank you all. Wow. You know, I'm so excited to learn about what Carrollton Farmers Ranch is doing, because as I've been in dialogue with educators, you know, sounds kind of wild, but around the world, I mean, this is the world we live in with blogs, I wanted to say, what are we doing in Texas? And wow, now we can champion what we're doing in Carrollton Farmers Ranch, and your school district can be next. And it's not about the technology. It's about getting the kids excited about literacy, getting them excited about communicating with the tools that they have available. So I'm going to take 10 minutes and we're going to wrap up. And this is what I want you to do. I want you, on a piece of paper that you have, to start jotting down something that might be a task that you're going to take away from today. Now, I am not naive to think that everybody in this room is going to just walk out, you know, on fire for wikis and podcasting and these kind of things. But clearly, you came here, your district sent you here, I'll say it that way, with a hope that you're going to have a takeaway, that you're going to take something away from today that you're going to be able to implement. And that's what I want you to think about in this last few minutes that we're talking. And I'm going to turn it over to Mike, and he's going to wrap us up, so we'll stay on the schedule. What would your tasks be based upon what we've talked about so far? Well, let me offer a few suggestions. And number one comes from Mark Prinsky, and that is to engage and not enrage. How many of you have children that are still in the K-12 schools? Okay. Let's think about the kind of classrooms we want our own children to be in. Because really, isn't that the bottom line when it comes to education? Where do I want my kids to go? Where do I want my grandkids? I don't know yet. But where do I want them to be going to school? And I want them to be going to a school where they're engaged and fired up about learning. Okay? Where they want to go back because they're so excited about learning. Mabry Middle School is a school I'll share the podcast feed from. It's in Georgia. And I had a chance to meet with Tim Tyson this past summer, who's the principal of Mabry Middle School, and he tells about just how their digital storytelling project at their school has transformed education for many kids. Because these kids are coming to school on their own time. They're staying late. Again, like you heard the Carrollton Farmers Ranch teachers talk about, the quality and the expectation that they have for themselves because they're publishing is worlds different than what it is when I am writing for the circular file, right? And then what we typically do. Maybe we write for the refrigerator, if we're lucky, as a student, but usually we're writing for that trash bin. I believe our role is to ignite a passion to learn within our students. And, you know, I taught in the public schools for 6 years, and I've been now at the college level for almost 5. And I know that not all of our teachers are trumpeting this message. But for your teachers in your buildings who are passionate about engaging kids and getting them fired up about learning, we've got to empower and equip those teachers and champion them. Because that is what we want. Those are the kind of teachers we want teaching our kids. I would challenge you to think about ill-defined problems. If that whole idea of well-defined, ill-defined is of interest, check out the podcast by David Johansen and dig into that a little bit. There's a whole center at the University of Missouri that's studying problem solving and recognizing that we need kids who are doing multidisciplinary things. I heard somebody say yesterday that elementary teachers love their kids, secondary teachers love their content, and university professors love themselves. Now, I'm not really one of them yet, okay? But we have got to engage in problem solving, even if you teach social studies at the high school. Kids are going to have to learn to be literate in the 21st century. And you are going to have to broaden your perspective if you're narrowly defined. Oh, I just teach math. No, you also teach literacy. We all do. We need to encourage divergent thinking. Not just convergent thinking. There's this one answer. But what's the other answers that even aren't on this piece of paper? What are the questions we need to ask and the answers that no one thought of before? because that's what's going to drive the American economy and also, I think, make learning worthwhile. We need to value creativity. You know, I wasn't sure what I was going to name my blog when I started blogging a couple years ago. And I picked this idea of the speed of creativity because it is incredible how fast things change. And how fast does creativity move? Can't measure it. And so we need to be valuing creativity and finding ways to empower learners, like you all are, to express themselves, to allow their voices to be heard, and also allow them to engage in activities that matter. As human beings, you and I all want to be engaged in work that matters. And when you can take an iPod or any other kind of digital recorder that you buy at Radio Shack and get other kinds, right, and you can send that home to the student, suddenly they can interview their grandparent. They can interview their neighbor, you know, and they can bring back an actual oral history archive talking about what it was like to grow up in the Texas Panhandle, you know, in the 1950s or the 1960s or whatever the case may be. That's exciting. I'm going to challenge you to engage in messy assessment. I'm not challenging you to forget testing. I'm challenging you to recognize that assessment is so much more than that one or two shot period of time in the year when we are doing these formal kinds of assessments. Assessments are what they talked about with your Oklahoma branch. They got to prove it. But the kids learning, there are ways to do that. Is it as easy as the scan sheet? No. But do any of you bubble professionally or know anyone who does bubble professionally? I don't. Do you know anyone who memorizes professionally? You might think actors, but let me tell you, if they can't emote and they can't connect with whatever they are, whether it's Shakespeare or anything else, They're not earning their dollars. So we don't bubble professionally, we don't memorize professionally. We need to assess in much more sophisticated, messy ways than we often are. School is just the start of the journey, and I think you heard that throughout today, throughout the presentations this morning. And so I'm going to give you one more book that I think you should read. And this is called John Dewey and the Art of Teaching. It's not about technology. What it's about is recognizing that at the heart of a great teaching and learning environment is a great teacher. And we've forgotten that in this country, I think, to a large degree. And I'll share a quotation from that, which is actually from 1933, from John Dewey, in the book How We Think. And I'll leave you with this. Dewey said, "Since learning is something that the pupil has to do himself and for himself or herself, the initiative lies with the learner. The teacher is a guide and director. He steers the boat, but the energy that propels it must come from those who are learning." And so our challenge is to try and have environments in our classrooms where our kids are excited and motivated to be there, and they are engaged with what we're doing. They're engaged with the program, and they're providing the power that is moving us forward in this educational journey. Share this podcast. Feel free to, you know, let others know about it. They can listen to it. We had a nice group here today. The amazing thing about the world in which we live is our communication is no longer limited by, you know, talking to a traditional publisher. I'm not asking anyone for permission to publish this podcast. Well, I did ask the Carrollton Branch folks, so you all have given permission. But we don't have to ask anybody else's permission to publish. And it's an exciting day in which we live. And I'm excited to be here with you in the 21st century, and we'll keep on learning together. So thank you all very much.